Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Oh, na, na, na. Oh, na, na, na. Da, da, da.
The beneficent, the merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I further bear witness that the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan is our divine leader in our midst today and our divine reminder. And I greet all of you, the listening audience, those of you who have joined us by phone, and those of you who have so graciously joined us in the chat room, and I greet in words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And I would also like to extend a greeting to my panelists this evening, Mr. Albert Briscoe. How are you, Brother Albert?
Oh, wonderful, Queen.
Praise be to Allah. Okay, well, I have been gone for the last couple of weeks, and I have missed you all tremendously. I was revamping the show Young, Gifted, and Black because a lot of people were thinking that Young, Gifted, and Black was all about hip-hop music, and I wanted to include some people who were doing some other things. I wanted to acknowledge our young people who are pursuing other avenues. It's not music. It's not sports, entrepreneurs, our authors, our playwrights, our artists, anything that young people are doing in a positive manner. And so we are honored to have Mr. Albert Briscoe with us tonight. He is the author of the book Lynching Willie, and he is also, I think you may have been the creator or the founder of a program called To Succeed, You Must Read. But before we get into all of that, we're going to first ask Mr. Briscoe, who is Albert Briscoe?
I don't know if we got enough time on the show to express.
We got 2 hours. Let's
Briscoe
do it.
All right. Well, you know, to give the listeners a background on myself, I'm an individual who came up in an underserved community. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, from North Minneapolis, and it's labeled as one of the most high crime areas here in our state. Usually when people hear about Minnesota and Minneapolis, the first thing they ask me is there any black people there? And of course, you know,
right?
Our brothers and sisters, you know, they're scattered all around here. But my story is similar to a lot of individual stories. I believe the only thing that may be unique about my story is where I'm at right now, and the courage that I've had to express my voice or to exercise my ability to have a voice. I started off selling drugs when I was 11 years old, and I'm 34 now. And here recently, I've been clean for 2 years. And when I say clean, I don't mean from any drug addiction. I was addicted to hustling. All right, and now we can go to programs. There's all kind of programs for NA, AA, but they didn't have HA, Hustlers Anonymous. So I reached a point in my life where I had to make a decision, you know, whether I was going to keep entertaining, you know, a destructive lifestyle, or if I was going to pull the best of what's inside of me to maximize my potential. Now, I'm gonna share some personal stuff with the audience about myself. I'm a convicted felon, a 5-time convicted felon. I was indicted for drug indictments and gun weapons charges, and I spent 12 years in prison. Now, during prison, I didn't treat the experience like most prisoners is, you know, it being a vacation or something, or it being playtime. You know, a lot of brothers are back there using their time playing cards and dominoes and just engaged in idle conversation. Well, I treated the experience like college. And instead of lifting weights and, you know, going out in the yard picking up weights, I was picking up books to build my mind up. So I took on a commitment to put the same effort that I was putting in the streets to impacting someone's lives, to inspire change in somebody that I may be able to reach with my influence. I'm a I'm a member of an organization still. I'm still active, you know, in the organizations that they call gangs. And I believe a lot of them are labeled as gangs because of the behavior that a lot of the members, you know, that they put out there or that they act out. But I felt like it was necessary to have an individual working from the inside out, because I believe that, you know, the brothers who are struggling and striving, you know, in our inner cities and are affiliated with these organizations, they need a model to also to look up to, or a model to, you know, to imitate. Not that I want anybody to be exactly like me, but I want to be an inspiration or someone. So I took on that challenge and used myself as a sacrificial lamb, disciplined myself. I'm struggling every day still because I suffer from a disease. And the disease I call it is called the dope man disease. So I'm still in the same environment that I came up in, and the same activity that was going on before is going on now. But it's taking me to be truly determined, you know, to turn a new page and try to make a contribution to society and become an asset instead of a liability.
Yes, sir. Okay, so now take me back to when you say that you are still an active member of a gang. So what are you doing as a member of this gang now?
Right now, I'm using my influence to inspire these guys to change the circumstances of their life by exercising better decisions. Okay, what I got going on right now this summer here in Minneapolis is I got a summer book club. To succeed, you must read, summer reading book club. And what I've done is this. I selected 10 books that have had an impact on me changing my perception on life. And I'm suggesting these books to the young men that I'm reaching out to. Now what I'm doing is I'm reaching out to 150 young men. And we're going to have a 10-week activity, and every week a book is going to be read. I'm going to suggest that they read a book a week. And the reason that we're advocating this, that I'm advocating this to them is because if these young men had their head in a book for an hour or two out of the day, it may prevent them from getting into something or becoming victim to some senseless crime. So, you know, ultimately my goal is to save a young life. But throughout the 10-week period, after they read a book, I have the authors of those books coming out to speak to these young men. And following the 10-week activity, I'm hosting a banquet, kind of like we're going to be acknowledging their achievement for the accomplishment of going through and completing the program. And we have some real key community figures, some national figures that's going to be participating. The keynote speaker is going to be Dr. Farrah Gray, which is a young brother. He's actually Brother Khalid Muhammad's son, okay, from the Nation of Islam. Mm-hmm. But the young brother will be coming and speaking and meeting with the young men. He'll be the keynote speaker for the event. We got Professor Mahmoud Al-Qadi. He's our African history historian here in Minnesota. We got a whole list of individuals that may be able to inspire these young men to act on better decisions or to even – and my whole – what I want to do with them is this. I want to produce something that I didn't have. So this is the reason that I came up with this concept. I want to place people in front of them that they can believe in, people that they may be able to see their self becoming one day, so that it'll inspire them to pursue the opportunities that are placed in front of them instead of just sitting around and entertaining foolishness.
Yes, sir. Okay, so can you name at least 5 of those books that you are suggesting for reading?
Yeah, first on the list, we got Farrah Gray's book, Realionaire. We got Sister Soldier's book, which one? No Disrespect. We have Lynch and Willie on the list, which is by author A.J. Briscoe, myself. Changing Places, which is a street fiction book by the author B-Lo. We have The Compassionate Rebel by an award-winning journalist and author by the name of Bert Berlow. And he actually has a pretty thick book. So what I did was I selected an individual out of the book because he goes on around the world and he picks people to write about who are changing, are creating change in people's lives. And the brother's name is James Everett here in Minnesota. And those are 5 books that have really impacted my whole perception of where I can go in life and who I am as an individual.
Okay, I didn't hear a message to the black man in there. What's up with that? What's up with that?
Because this is what we do, sister. You know, just like, you know, what the minister says, we got to feed them some baby food before we feed them some steak. You know what I mean? So the age group of these, yeah, the age group that we targeting is from 11 to 19. So I wanted to kind of keep it fundamental, but we're tying in imperative information.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope that you will get that book in because it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or Buddhist or Hindu or whatever your faith is, that is an absolutely wonderful, wonderful book to start. I think my children started reading it when they were 6. So it's very simple and an easy read and very, it's just very plain and to the point. Okay. So now, tell me about prison. How did prison, just being in that environment, influence you to come out and make a decision to do something different? Now, I know you say you read, but, you know, Did you do 12 years flat, or you did 12 years in combination?
Yeah, I was a knucklehead. I did 12 years in installments. You know, so
okay.
I was going in, giving them 3-4 years, coming out, you know, going back, doing the same thing, a year here. You know, so I was struggling with my life choices and my lifestyle choice. I'm a statistic of recidivism.
So, in being in prison, just being in that environment, did that influence you to come out and do something different than being in that environment? Is that what influenced you to pick up a book and read? Because what, maybe at some point you found that your life was going spiraling downhill, or what was the inspiration?
Well, the true inspiration was this. I actually have been indicted on a 4-count indictment, and the indictment was based on me serving or selling to a confidential informant in a school zone. And those charges carry 15 years minimum. So I had a 4-count indictment, which I was facing 60 years. And now this is how powerful reading is. And this is one of the reasons that I advocate literacy. After I was indicted and extradited to a different city, I didn't have a lawyer. I didn't know anybody in that city, you know, that I could just call to take care of my business. So every opportunity that came about for me to go to that law library, I was knocking down that door. All right, and I got my motion of discovery, which is your facts of your case, and I assessed it, went through it, you know, with a fine-tooth comb, and I found a loophole. Based on something that they call the chain of custody, where everybody involved in the investigation, they have to sign off on it. So the detectives, the lab techs who are weighing the drugs, everybody has to sign off on it. And I found an inconsistency on the reports, where there was no signatures, the amount of the, you know, the drugs weren't the same. And I presented this to my public defender, and he presented it to the judge. And the judge stood in front of the judge, and she told me that she didn't want me on her docket, and she was going to offer me 3 years at 30%. So I snatched the pen out of the lawyer's hand, and I signed the document. And this is an example of the power of reading. Reading literally saved my life. I maintain my liberty through picking up a book and being determined. And I want to share this with other individuals, because I know that they have the same power inside of them to achieve or overcome any obstacle that may be put in place in front of them.
Wow, that is remarkable. So you went from facing 60 years and actually ending up with 3.
Correct.
Wow. So did you find that amongst the population of you who were incarcerated that there was a literacy issue? Because I noticed in, I think it's some documents that you sent me, a questionnaire or something, that you are advocating prison literacy as well, not just for people who are on the street, but also for those who are incarcerated, because maybe, just like you said, maybe it could liberate them from some of these 60, 70, 80 and lifetime sentences that they are facing. Is this something that you plan to incorporate into the prisons at some point?
Yes, I actually just launched a prison book program, and it's called BRAINS. And the acronym for BRAINS stands for Books Rehabilitating American Inmates National Society. Okay. And I had actually started this book club while I was doing 9 years, serving a 9-year sentence in prison. And the reason that that I created this book club is because the prison libraries didn't have the type of material that us brothers wanted to read. They didn't have Message to the Black Man. They didn't have Destruction of Black Civilization. They didn't have, you know, the broader files, you know, Naeem Akbar. So I actually got with the inmates that I knew were interested in elevating their mind state, and we pooled our money. And we had a list of books and everybody made a suggestion on the books that they wanted to read, and we used the power of pooling our money to purchase the books so that we could have the material that we were interested in reading while in prison.
Yes, sir. Wow, that is awesome. Okay, and so I'm going to get that information to you from you later towards the end of the show, because I want the listening audience, if they have inmates who family members who aren't inmates, that maybe they can tap into that program. So we'll get all your social networks and information from you towards the end of the show. And if you would, Brother Albert, you know, we have lost so many, countless young people. In 2013 alone, since January 1st, we have lost 2,417 young people between the ages of 6 and 25 to gun violence in America. That's almost 2,500 young people are gone already, and it's not even half the year. So not only about the street play and the gun violence, but, you know, what would you say to influence a person not to go down that road? And I want you to describe to them, as graphic as you want, what prison life is really, really like. Because we got young people that's thinking that, you know, it's easy. They hear a lot of people come out and say, oh, man, I could do 5 flat on my head and ain't no thing. And that day to day, that second to second, that moment to moment, what is that like?
Okay, now, you know, first of all, I believe in this, and I tell young men this, that, you know, your attitude determines your altitude in life. And I say that because of this. The inmates create the environment in prison. Now, it can either be a battle zone, you know, because we got a variation of cliques and gangs, or it can be an institute of learning. You know, brothers is taking advantage of the opportunity to educate themselves through whatever vocations are extended or whatever correspondence courses they may be able to enroll in. You know, it's all about the attitude of the inmates. And this is another misconception about prison that's going on amongst our youth. But they have the misconception that prison is the passage to manhood. And that's something that we have to uncondition. We have to recondition our mind to thinking in that way, because the passage of manhood stands right amongst us where we're at in society. You know, the passage of manhood doesn't have to do with how big your rims are, how many girls you can run up in. You know, it should be based on, you know, how many lives you have impacted, you know, how many accolades have you obtained, you know, not on an arrogant level, but just on a level to kind of measure and gauge our ability to achieve. So once brothers start thinking that prison is a passage of manhood and they got to go in there and kind of bounce the testosterone off each other, it's a competition of, you know, who the toughest is. You know, if they change that whole mind state, then prison could actually be an institute of development. You know, when brothers come in, this is what I wish would have been. It would have been like when I came in. I wish it would have been some elders in there who may have, you know, some lengthy sentences or something. They come through and they screen the young brothers. Like, brother, what are you in here for? And after they find that out, well, we can tell them, we got a few brothers in the law library. Man, we're going to help you with your case. You know, and this is the type of environment that prison could be formed around or modeled by, and we'll be in there building leaders instead of, you know, building better criminals.
Right. And what about the treatment aspect of it? Because sometimes, you know, brothers can go to prison and they can get with their homeboys or get with their gang affiliates from all over the state or wherever they're serving, but what is the treatment like from the prison administration and what is the labor like? Because I want them to get a real idea about prison, that it's not just you being in the cell playing dominoes and cards with your homies.
No, they definitely they have a requirement to where you're either going to go to school or you're going to work for the 25 cents an hour, which is worse than sweatshop wages, and I don't know why prisons aren't labeled as sweatshops, but they have a requirement where you're going to go to school or work or you're going to be locked in that cell for 23 hours a day. So, and what I'm doing, though, also, you know, with my prison advocacy is this. I've extended the opportunity to prisoners who may have the talent or the skill of writing to actually have the opportunity to have their works published through Stomp Entertainment, through my publishing company. And it's not about a monetary thing. I don't care about, you know, making no money off of them. I have everything materially that a young man could want or that young men are out here jeopardizing their life to obtain, you know. So my main thing is this, is providing a voice for those who may feel like they don't have a voice or who don't have the resources to actually get what they have to say out. And I want to be, you know, the bridge to the prison system to not only create voices for them, but to also give them an alternative of employment. Because what I've been doing is this. I'm starting to run my company out of prison. I have prisoners, inmates on board as editors, as they write articles as a journalist. So what I'm doing with the opportunity that I have out here is also extending the opportunity to them so they'll have a better quality of life while they're enduring their prison experience.
That is absolutely awesome. Wow. So I heard you mention that you wished that there were some elders or some advocates that were in prison that would screen the young men and find out what they were there for and help them with their cases. But let's step out of the prison walls for a minute. In your opinion, what are the key elements that are missing from our men in particularly and our communities in general?
First of all, I'm going to say courage. All right. And this is the thing. Not overall. I'm not going to say all around the board courage, you know, and every single walk of life, but courage in the sense of standing up. Standing up for what may be ideal or realistic outside of what the trend is. Okay. And also, I believe that, like I mentioned before, you know, our people, especially our young people, they have to get involved in black media, because what's going on is we're allowing other people, you know, outside of our culture, outside of our color, you know, our race, we're allowing them to define us. Because they're the ones that's utilizing this technology and the tools of media. Okay, so one thing that we have to do is we have to start telling our story. Because if we don't tell our story, somebody else is going to be there to tell the story for us. And they're going to make what they call it. They don't call it history. They call it what? His story. Okay, so I believe that's one of the most important things, you know, or the most important element that's missing, you know, is our people getting involved in media, and also our people showing an interest in politics. Because I tell my little guys this, if you don't know how much time this charge carries for whatever you're doing, then you out here aimless. Now, if you knew what you was working with, then you can cheat. You'll be able to determine whether or not you can deal with the consequences of this or not. You know, and I don't do it to influence them to do anything wrong. I just do it in a sense to try to train them to be knowledgeable about anything that you're doing. So first of all, we have to be knowledge. We have to gain some knowledge about ourselves, because we lost our identity. We're around here. We're trying to adopt other people's cultural traits or their cultural behaviors. You know, we always talking about the mob or the mafia or the gangsters. Well, it was for the Mexicans and the Italians, and that wasn't for our people. You know what I mean? So getting in tune with what our true identity is, even though it's a big time gap that has went by and our cultural, you know, our culture has changed in ways, but it's still some concrete things that we have to hold on to. Like right now, these young sisters out here, all they know is McDonald's and Benihana and Dots and J.C. Penney's or something. You know, the whole thing of, you know, knowing how to sew, you know, knowing how to garden, just being domesticated, not on a subservient level to where, you know, somebody is using you, you know, on a slave type situation, but just on a level of having those skills so that we can progress economically, we can do things frugally, you know, because we want to spend our money outside of the hood. And I'm penning a book right now, and it's called Robin the Hood, and it's based on this. We know the original story of Robin Hood is Robin Hood taken from the rich and given to the poor. But what's going on right now is that our people are taken from the poor and going to spend their money from the rich. I mean, with the rich. So I'm able to this book title, Robin the Hood.
Wow, I can't wait for that one. Okay, before I go to the next question, I just want to remind the listening audience, those of you who are in the chat room, if you have a question for Brother Albert Briscoe, please type it in and I will ask the question on your behalf. Those of you who are joining us via telephone, press 1 on your keypad if you have a question, and, of course, we will bring you in live to ask your question. Okay. Okay, the next question is, well, I think you already kind of answered it, but I'm going to ask it anyway since I already put it down here to ask, is what do you hope to accomplish with the reading program in particularly, overall, are you going to try to take this to, I know you said you're already kind of putting it in the prisons, but first of all, where are you from? Minnesota, what city?
From Minneapolis. Minnesota, they call it the 9 or 10,000 lakes, the greater Twin Cities area.
Okay. So is this something that you plan to take nationally as well as in the prisons? Or what do you plan to do with the reading program in particularly?
Definitely, you know, I have it in mind to expand and go, you know, go nationally. But unfortunately, you know, monetary issues always arise when you're doing something and you're not begging. I ain't begging for none of these community activists or none of these community programs. I ain't writing no grants. I don't got nothing against it, but I just haven't did it. I'm actually taking the funds that are my personal, you know, my personal earnings, and I'm fueling everything I'm doing with my personal earnings. So I'm utilizing my patience and keeping my strive alive in hopes that, you know, I will either gather the resources or be blessed with the monetary resources to extend my campaign nationwide.
Yes, sir. And you briefly mentioned women, but can you tell me in your opinion, because you're a man, when you kind of sit back, and I know you're married, but when you kind of sit back and just look at the condition of the black woman today and the condition of our domestic life, with black women being 75% of the head of household nationally in our community, what can we do better, in your opinion, to enhance positive relationships in our communities? Because women who are raising young boys in particularly are absolutely putting them at risk. You're automatically at risk when you're growing up as a young man without a father. And now that percentage is up to 75% in our communities. What can we do better as a group of people, you know, as a community, as men individually and as women individually, what can we do better to change those terrible, terrible statistics?
Okay, first of all, I believe this is what it's going to take. Somebody's going to have to take on the responsibility to be responsible. And what has happened is everybody has abandoned that task, okay, because what I see is this, and I'm not targeting, you know, the young women or the women in our community. I'm harder on the men because they're really out of pocket. When I'm sitting around here watching 45-year-old men with skinny jeans on or their pants sagging and a fitted cap, you know, and they talking to some 16-year-old girl. Okay, so the first thing has to be, you know, it has to be some models put in place. You know, we have to have something, you know, to imitate. Not in the sense, like I said, taking on somebody else's identity, but to be an example of what excellence is, because we should be striving towards excellence no matter what the circumstances of our conditions are. So when we start getting our brothers, you know, and our sisters to take on the responsibility to act as honorable adults, then I believe it'll be a snowball effect, because this is what's happening. The youth are looking at the elders suited up, looking like they're looking, and they're kind of perceiving them as a peer instead of somebody to look up to or admire, or somebody who could be their guidance and counsel. So now we have the roles reversed. The fathers are like the sons, and the sons are like fathers to the fathers, and vice versa. The young ladies is out here taking care of the mother's kids, their little sisters and brothers, you know, so they're taking on these responsibilities with just a partial instruction. If we go get a model car, we may need instruction to put it together, and if we only have a partial instruction, then we won't be able to complete the project. So for us to be successful at our project of reconditioning our mind, the mind state of a culture, somebody has to take on the responsibility to be responsible for our youth and the economic development of our community.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And, you know, earlier this year, the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan took the FOI to the street and just talked to our young people. Now, everybody has, you know, different views and different religions and things like that. Do you think religion in itself helps, or do you think that it further divides our people?
I'm going to be almost 50-50 on that one. Okay, because personally, you know, I'm speaking from a personal, you know, experience. The principles and the guidelines that are set in concrete with the Nation of Islam help mold my character and develop me into who I am right now. So, and the aspect of religion being something, you know, created to govern man, religion is something that's necessary, you know. Now, when we talk about different religious sects, that's something that's out of control right now, because everybody has their own agenda. Everybody wants to be recognized for being, you know, God's people or the true people or whatever it may be. And it's always some type of difference, you know, to pull us apart rather than to bring us together. So one thing that we experienced right here in Minnesota, we had a tornado a couple of years ago. And now after the tornado hit, when we went out in the streets, you seen, we got a melting pot of races right here. You seen people of all different races out helping out, you know, moving trees, tending to people, you know. And that was an act of God that occurred. The tornado, that was an act of God. And that brought people together. So, you know, it may be that it has to be some form or some act of God, you know, to bring people together to dissolve those religious, you know, those religious lines. But religion is a touchy subject, and everybody's going to have their opinion on it, like you said. And I guess an individual has to, you know, feel good about it. If it's something that makes you feel good, if it feels right, then pursue it, you know, until, you know, you feel like you reached another level in your study, because that's me personally. I'm a seeker of truth. So you know, while I was incarcerated, I also, you know, was almost taking up theology, like, because I was studying Hinduism, Buddhism, Catholicism, whatever it may be. You know, not that I was actually trying to take on these religions, but I feel like this personally. You know, everybody has a God in their religion. They call him a certain thing. You know, everybody does. Yahweh, Allah, whatever it may be. You know, that's what they do. But this is the thing, though. I don't want to be, you know, persecuted for not being aware of what God may have decreed or whatever he may have spoken. And I'm not going to say that somebody else's religion ain't right unless they're doing something right that is just out of pocket. You know what I mean? But besides that, though, I try to make myself aware of anything that is related to God, which is what they call it, taqwa, being God conscious.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Okay, so you talked a little bit about economics in our own communities, and of course, I don't have to tell you what the economy is like now. I don't have to tell you that black unemployment realistically is 68% in the black community, even though nationally they say it's 16 or 17%. That is certainly not true. So being that, of course, our government and the policies of America is not capable anymore of creating jobs for our people, and particularly in the population in general, what would you suggest for those people who are just destitute and there is no work? And what would you suggest for the students who are graduating from college and going through the same trend of going to school and trying to get into corporate America and work for somebody for 50 years, and hopefully by that time there will be some kind of pension and some kind of retirement for you and some kind of Social Security for you? What about the reality of our economy?
Okay. First, you know, I have to say this. I'm not going to place no blame on anybody for, you know, our conditions, because of, you know, what can be done out here right now in this day of time. But what I would suggest to, you know, individuals who may be, you know, in a destitute, a situation where, you know, it's you know, it may seem like a struggle. I would suggest that they volunteer, and this is what I do to my young kids, because most of them, I work on a program where kids they come to this program as an alternative to getting caught with guns. So when they get caught with guns, instead of going to juvenile, they come to this program. All right. So what I tell these young guys is this. You have to rebuild your credibility in the community, first of all, for people to even take you serious, because they sit and they bore witness to how you've acted out, you know, throughout your time growing up. So volunteering is very key, because it's going to put you in a position to where somebody can they can make an assessment on your skill set. They can kind of determine where your skill set lies, okay? And also, you may run into somebody who may admire your work ethic or your determination or your attitude or whatever it may be, which may create a job opportunity. And as far as, you know, our people just being destitute, we don't have no excuses no more, because if we can invest in putting $8,500 rims on a $700 car, or if it's a $70,000 car, and go buy some Jordans and a new fit and all of that, then we can, we're not poor. And I tell these guys, my young guys, this. Okay, you got a closet full of J's in there. That's what they call them, the Air Jordan. You got a closet full of J's in there. Now, if you count that up in there, I want you to tell me how much money you got. Okay, and so the average young guy might have five, 5, 10 pairs of Jordans. And I tell them, now think about this. Instead of going and buying them Jordans when they come out, when they first come out, why don't you invest in some Nike stock? Okay, so putting different things on their mind, you know, may create a situation where they start pursuing other things. So, but as I was saying, though, we don't have no excuse right now because we're investing in everything but ourselves. Right now, when we at this community, we got foreigners. They got it spotted all around here with corner stores, gas stations. It's not one black corner store or gas station in my community. North Minneapolis, and it's highly populated with black people, okay? But it's guys everywhere you go, you see them with chains hanging, fresh fits, big old rims. They got to need a ladder to get out the car or the truck. You know what I mean? And everybody wants to complain about not having no money. Yeah, everybody want to complain about not having no money. Well, we have an example in front of us. Let's say the Nation of Islam with every department that they have, you know, economic department, horticulture, agriculture department, everything. This is an example of how to invest your money and reciprocate it with amongst yourself, amongst our people. And if we take those steps and invest in ourselves, then we might not be so destitute, or we might not be in a position where we got our hand out or we begging. The whole thing is this: we just have to make better decisions.
Yes, sir. Okay, and I'm gonna ask you about two other things. I want to ask you about black leadership, and I'm not talking about a national front, because I grew up in Compton, California, and in Compton, every black father or every black man at some point, whether he was a preacher or a teacher or a mailman or whatever, took on the role of some kind of leadership in our community. So when you look, not just across your community, but when you look just across the nation, what has happened to our black leadership? I mean, because to me, in my personal opinion, Minister Farrakhan is the only true black leader that we have now. But in other cities and states, we used to have black leaders who advocated for our cause, that took on the policies of America for the betterment of our people. So what has happened to that type of leadership?
I believe that type of leadership has been dissolved by greed and opportunity, because they got, like, right here, right now, like I explained to you, it should be people running out of the, you know, out of the cuts around here like roaches, you know, to even support or get on board with the advocation of literacy. Okay, but now what they have going on in our community is this. They have a group of individuals who they label as troubled or whatever, and they'll sit and create a program and write up a grant or a proposal to receive some funds to supposedly help these individuals, these troubled individuals. And what's happening is that we're not seeing none of that money. With the programs that we see in the community, we see some flyers and some T-shirts, but when it comes down to something tangible, it's not there. They want to sit down and do a whole bunch of talking. And this is the thing with the leadership now. Of course, you know, our leadership is going to seem like it's remote because of the gap that's existence between our youth and our elders. What, don't the minister got a book called Bridging the Gap?
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's one of the books, you know, from that's based on the teachings of the Nation, is Bridging the Gap, okay? And what it's speaking upon is, you know, the disrespect that the youth have for the elders and the disconcern that the elders have for the youth, basically. And
is that from fear? You think
it's from
fear?
Fear
or have elders given up?
No, it goes back to this right here. You know, the elder, we got a slot of time where we went from a black power movement to a crack epidemic. So now the fathers of the youth out here now the ones that was they was beaten up by the crack epidemic. So now our elders are looking at our youth are looking at our elders with no respect, because smoking crack in the hood, that's something that's taboo. Even though, you know, the kids want to smoke PCP and pop pills and Molly and do everything else, it was just something that was labeled as taboo. So when the youth look at these older individuals who picked up this habit because it was a trend back then, you know, cocaine and crack was a trend like X pills is right now with our youth, you know, and it just, it had our people lost and misguided, and it's just propelled over until today. So now they're looking at these adults with no respect because of what they're doing. That's it. So, yeah, the youth don't have no respect for the elders when, like I said, they see them a 59, 50 in some skinny jeans or some pants sagging. They looking like them. So it's a big gap, you know, that needs to be bridged right there, and it goes to, you know, us being responsible as the leaders of our communities.
And you have mentioned earlier, too, Brother Albert, about, excuse me, having to write our own stories and create our own media. And, of course, that's something that I'm very, I can't even talk right now.
That's something you utilize right now.
Because that, I was trying not to cough, but you know, that's something that I really advocate, because of course, you know, here on Nation Building Network we have shows 7 days a week, and mm-hmm. you know, last year I actually just decided to not watch television because of all of the trash and the poor depiction of us and how we are portrayed, even through our culture. Our, you know, our craft, our art, you know, we don't have control over our own natural God-given talent anymore. And I hate to do this because I've known her since she was a child, but Beyonce is a perfect example. I live, you know, in the Houston area, and knew her when she was such a very young child. And to see where she started versus where she is now. Not to say that her talents are not great, because they are. She is a phenomenal singer, actor, actress, but her style of dress and how she is portrayed, when every time I see her now, she's half naked. We have one of the top radio television shows, which I've never seen, called Scandal, where our beautiful sister queen, Kerry Washington, is playing basically a White House hooker, from what I understand, because like I said, I've never seen it. This type of thing that they do with us in the media, you know, how can we better advocate for young people in particularly to get involved in the creation of our own media, and where do they start?
Okay, what I would say is this. First of all, we got to have something that appeals to them. Well, a strategy that I use is this. I also pen fictional novels. And I pen fictional novels under the pseudonym B-Lo, but I pen fictional novels to inspire young people to make better decisions. And the strategy I used was this. I used the same street, you know, appeal to get their attention, and I have some impacting and some powerful messages inside of these books. So when they pick these books up, they can actually take this information and apply it to their life to change their circumstances. And the basis of the books is just what you spoke on. It's glorifying a different personality. So instead of glorifying the dope man or the robber or the pimp or something, we're glorifying the entrepreneur, the student, you know, to kind of instill a different perspective of how, you know, how we can be, you know, basically, because we're taking pride in these and these personalities that are destructive to, you know, to our lifestyle and just our being, period. You know, just as you stated with the example with the sister, you know, because she's admired. People look up to them. So what the kids are going to do now is they're going to do what they see the people they admire doing. So I've been using examples, positive examples, with influential people to inspire a different train of thought in individuals.
Okay. And let me ask you, because, you know, there's this old cliche that says, if you want to keep anything from black people, put it in a book. And I know often I've heard you mention that, you know, most of your work is done in the form of literature where people will actually have to read. So do you plan to take it to the next level, maybe putting it in music and maybe putting it mainstream television or creating your own television?
Yeah, definitely. Right now, you know, we're working on the musical project for Lynching Willie and Changing Places, Volume 1. Okay, I've been approached by a sister named Tanya Johnson. She's actually a county commissioner candidate here in Minneapolis, and she writes screenplays.
Yes, I know her.
Oh, okay. Tanya Johnson. Well, you know, she had contacted me. Well, I had contacted her because my grandmother had passed in December, and she had an elaborate wardrobe. You know, she was an Eastern star. She was well accomplished. So we had donated, our grandmother's clothes to her for her plays, you know, so they could utilize the garments for the plays. And after she was introduced to my works, she had called me and she was excited, and she had told me that she wanted to create a screenplay, you know, out of one of my books. And she's the third person that approached me with this. So these type of opportunities have just kind of been presenting themselves to me. And what I've done, I've taken it upon myself to learn the craft of composing, composing a screenplay. You know, so I just finished my first screenplay for a short film, and it's not in relation to any of my books, but I've mastered my craft to the point to where, you know, I could probably convert a book into a screenplay in a week, or a screenplay into a book into, you know, in a week's time. So I definitely, you know, I'm moving towards pursuing other avenues of promotion, you know, for these projects, because these projects, it's not about how much money I can make. It's about how many people I can impact with these messages.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Okay, and so in entertainment today, tell me your opinion. What you think about the music?
What I'm going to actually do, I'm going to send you something, Queen, and you can post it, you know, on the Nation Building Network. But I just, I'm also a journalist. I just got a job with the local newspaper because of my writing ability. People, you know, things, amazing things have been happening that they've been going on, you know, every single day. but what I intend to do though, could you repeat your question one more time, Queen? Because I have somebody.
Well, I wanted to know what did you think about the music of today, the so called gangster rap and the lyrics that they're using and promoting the bling bling and the sex thing and, you know, sexually explicit, vulgarity, violence. What is your opinion about the music? Because a lot of the rappers, you know, they singing about the life, but they don't live the life. And this is what's being promoted, and this is what our children are gravitating to in the music. So what's your opinion on the music today?
Okay, I believe that music is powerful. That's probably one of the most powerful tools, you know, that are influencing, you know, our people is music. And we have to, my thing is this, from what I do. Now, I'm not knocking none of these people I'm finna mention, but people like Nicki Turner, Vicky Stringer, you know, 50 Cent Quan, they write these books, and I admire them for, you know, the effort. But the material that they're writing is, and I don't mean no disrespect, but it's almost, I'm going to say garbage. And I'm saying this because of the people that are receiving this information, they're putting these books in them in the hands of vulnerable minds, and people are actually trying to act out the stories in the book. Because our youth, it's a situation where we've taken a fantasy. We're living a fantasy like it's our reality. Okay, so these books are entertaining that train of thought. You know, because in these books, they're glorifying the dope man, the pimp, the prostitute. You know, somebody done shot the police in front of the police and don't go to jail. They're just fantasies. They're entertainment. But this entertainment is what's popular. It's blazing right now. And like I said, it's being placed in the hands of vulnerable minds. And that's something that I have to stand. I speak on to stand, set myself apart from others, because the books I write, in every book that I write, it's an impacting message. Like I said, that somebody could take and apply it to their life to change their circumstances. But if you don't mind, I'm gonna just read something to you real quick on an article that I wrote, and it's called "The Power of Music." This is what it says. It says, I have taught myself to always begin with myself in every assessment I make. I shall start with this method in reference to how the power of music affects me. Music is a mood-altering element in my world. I can listen to it and be inspired, uplifted, nostalgic, infuriated, romantic, or violent. I believe this is how the term of using music to set the mood came about. We want to set the mood. So, you know, that's how the term, you know, setting the mood came about, because of the impact that, you know, music, the power that music has on us. Okay, I'm going to keep on and say, it is the words of the music that triggers a certain feeling to surface. Rhythms can create this effect as well. Through my observation of others' behavior to music, I can determine that it has the same effect on others. For example, when Waka Flocka is played in a club, it starts to get a little physical. But when R. Kelly or the Isley Brothers, like the introductory music was played, the women are being pursued, you know. So it's toning that aggression down. We place high levels of energy in the music, thus transforming power to its words when we pour our emotion and attitude into it. I believe one has to be careful of the transmission of this energy based on the universe's law of attraction. These are the circumstances that are created from acting on the thoughts that we have allowed to shape our perception of reality. And this is about two paragraphs more, and then I'm gonna close this. But it said, when these words are power extractors, it changes our perception and behavior. We unconsciously brainwash ourselves by repeating words and phrases that blend beautifully with the rhythms that make us move. Once we see these acts being glorified, it becomes appealing, and we imitate this behavior out of our admiration, trends, or gaining attention. This leads to self-destruction. These behaviors develop into lifestyles that are toxic to our culture. These behaviors are promoting a misrepresentation of our women, money mismanagement, displacing value on lives, counterproductiveness, distrust, and betrayal. Our youth believe that this music defines them because they can relate to the things being said. But we must let them know that their purpose on this earth is not to sell dope to fiends or to pimp hoes, commit robberies, or to kill one another or squander money. And that's all I'm going to read right there. But that's my insight.
That is a wonderful, wonderful article. And I would be so gracious, if I'd be so appreciative if you share that with us, because that really, really speaks to a lot of genres that we face in our community, and it kind of covers everything. So that is a wonderful, wonderful article. And we're going to take a question from... look like St. Louis, Missouri. So, area code 304, your mic is live. You have a question?
Hey, how y'all doing? This is a Pianki Comp, St. Louis.
How you doing, sir?
Good evening, brother. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You know, I was listening to the conversation, and I asked the question, too. You know, we talk about making screenplays, and we talk about movies and even writing books. But there is so much that can be done based on real live people that done powerful things to create wealth in this country, black people that is, but we don't want to write about them. For instance, you had why come blacks don't have a series like old Dallas with J.R. Ewing and so forth? Well, they had Jake Simmons, who comes out of Texas, who was a African-American oil dynasty he created. You have other stories like Black Empire, which was by George Shuler, who was a columnist for the Pittsburgh Courier back in the late 1920s. And there's another book that would make a good movie by, it's called An All-American Deal. Those would make some excellent stories, especially Black Empire. So we have the material there to make. We don't have to resort to fiction. And if our children can look at this and see this going on, wouldn't it be better to have a gang that's out there competing with the Halliburtons and the Exxon Mobils and so on? Because that's all they are. They're gangs too, right? You get
basically.
Me?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so if you ever have a chance, and young brother, read the book Black Empire. It would be something you wouldn't put down. And An All-American Deal. Those are two books that, you know, that would rock your soul. Historical people that, like I said, you have your own black J.R. Ewing. His name was Jake Simmons. He was a power broker. He was an oil man. He created an oil dynasty in Texas. You had C.R. Patterson, who built was building automobiles before Ford.
Okay, brother, what's your name?
My name is Pianchi.
Okay, Pianchi. Okay. Well, you know, hopefully, since you know, shared those suggestions with us, hopefully that maybe you're putting that out and working with like minds and, you know, hopefully you can create some things yourself and share that with us, you know, because sometimes we have to be pioneers.
And yeah, well,
so
I understand.
When we have these great ideas and these opportunities, of course, we need to take advantage of them. So thank you. Thank you for calling in with your comment.
Okay.
Okay, and what do you think about that, Brother Albert?
I mean, the brother hit on something, you know, that was key. You know, it falls back on, you know, what we was talking about, though, the economic development of our community and investing in ourselves, you know, and it has to be somebody doing that for somebody to be writing about it or telling the story. And one thing we have to do, we have to keep our legacy alive by acknowledging history, but we also have to make history right now in our day and time because we have the ability to do that. So, you know, like I mentioned, the brother Farrah Gray, you know, he was impacting to me, you know, while I was in prison. And to me, I made history because now I'm shaking hands with this brother. And I'm an entrepreneur. Our stories mirror each other. We just had different products. This young man started out selling rocks, picking up rocks and painting them and selling them door to door in the projects in Chicago. And people laughed at him, you know what I mean? But he was determined to be an entrepreneur. And I started out at 11 years old selling crack rocks. You know what I mean? It's just about the product that we're pushing, man. And, you know, it all goes to one investing in ourselves and building, nation building, because we are young, gifted, and black. And people shouldn't be talking about the roadblocks that they have because this is what people say. They be pissing me off, Queen. They be talking about, I can't do this because I'm black. All right, they won't give me a job because I'm this or that because I'm black. And this is what people need to be saying. I know I can do this because I'm black. When you reflect on all the obstacles and challenges that we have overcome throughout our years and all the different areas we excelled in and reached the pinnacle in, that's what we should be stating. Well, I know I can do this because I'm black, not because
you better teach. Yes,
you see what,
sir,
I'm saying, Queen?
Yes, sir. You better teach, brother. Yes, sir. Okay, listen, we're going to take a break. We're going to play a song, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the book, Lynching Willie. So right now, I'm going to play a song by our own beloved brother, DeJuan, out of Los Angeles, California. And this one is entitled, Jesus Was a Gangster.
Public enemy number one. This is a joke. I got a message for you, your friends. You don't know. I got a $250,000 contract on anybody involved.
The architect of the ark. For 40 days and 40 nights, the world was in the dark. What is a real gangster? Guns and drugs hanging at the park. Now that ain't where the revolution start. Nah, Jesus was a gangster. You got your nerve calling yourself a Christian. Them hypocrites ain't really with the business. They ready to take you to the powers that be like Moses. Quit lying to yourselves. You need Pinocchio's noses. Oh, it's sink or swim and I ain't sinking. Nah, stay fired up, fast moving, quick thinking. Down to the morning time when the sun rises. They say the war's in the mind and it's for the mind. You're looking at a S-O-U-L soldier. So fall in to get diagnosed bipolar. Ryan shall find whatever he seeks. And Jesus was a gangster, just like me.
Yes, sir. What you know about that gangster, gangster? Probably not a thing because of what you're seeing on that big screen. They selling you a dream in the system of things. You ain't nothing but a wankster, wankster. I'll show you a gangster. Jesus, David, Moses, the messenger, the king, and the soldier. Don't say I never told you. You know you got it through your mind, but don't be surprised.
Yes, sir.
You run
I'll
out
represent
of
that
time.
West region, taking it straight to these heathens. Bring sunlight to the late evening. Daylight saving time. Them devils dancing in my shadow. Black with eyes, Aaron and Moses to the barrows of the industry. Going hard on the enemies. Righteous gangsters. Call that positive energy. OD, I overdose on holy water, which is wisdom. Hallelujah. I'm smarter than the average man. Released me from aberration. Was locked up. Now I'm free from salvation.
That's right.
Funny how it all starts to make sense.
Can't
make dollars till you're spiritual.
You're spiritual.
When
rich.
It comes to saying, oh my dean, I be hustling.
Up a new life. End of discussion.
He shall find whatever he seeks. Yeah. Muhammad was a gangster, just like me. Yeah.
What you know about that gangster, gangster? Probably not a thing because of what you're seeing on that big screen. They selling you a dream in the system of things. You ain't nothing but a wankster, wankster. I'll show you a gangster. Jesus, David, Moses, the messenger, the king, and the soldier. Don't say I never told you. You know you got it through your mind, but don't be surprised if you run out of time. Assalamu alaikum, rahma to Allah. Muhammad is the messenger, Allahu Akbar, the creator of the moon and the sun and the stars, the birds and the bees and the man and the sharks, the land and the sea and the air that I breathe, everything in between. That's why I be on my deen. It's better to have prayer than to lay me down to sleep. So I bow down, pray that he forgives me. What you know about the gangster, gangster? Probably not a thing because of what you're seeing on that big screen. They selling you a dream in the system of things. You ain't nothing but a wankster, wankster. I'll show you a gangster. Jesus, David, Moses, the messenger, the king, and the soldier. Don't say I never told you. You know you got it through your mind, but don't be surprised if you run out of time.
All right, that was Brother DeJuan, all the way from Los Angeles, California. Okay, we're back with Brother Albert Briscoe. And Brother Albert, tell us about this book, Lynchin' Willie.
Oh, Lynchin' Willie is a literary work that reflects one of our nation's most dehumanizing realities, which is the side effects of slavery. Now this book focuses on the that stagnated a culture for 300 years, and that element is fear. And that fear that provoked the people into anger, shame, and embarrassment. And my whole purpose for penning this book was I didn't hear anybody talking about Lynch and Willie in this aspect. Now, the brother William Lynch, I mean, nobody talking about Willie Lynch. The brother William Lynch, the Caucasian brother, he made a proclamation on the St. James River of 1712. He had informed the slave owners that if they implemented his theory on how to make a slave and keep a slave, that it would work for 300 years.
Okay, wait a minute. I just got one question. Why do you call him brother?
The brother Willie Lynch... Just out of respect. That's all. I don't got no respect for Willie Lynch, but you know, just making it a little humorous, making it a little humorous. That's all.
Okay, I was worried there for a minute. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, now this is the thing though. He made this proclamation in 1712. What's the year that we're in today, Queen?
2013, sir.
Okay, and he said that his theory will work for 300 years if it was implemented. How many years have passed from 1712 to 2013? 300 years. So,
301 years. Mm-hmm.
301 years, and I have written this book last year, and I intentionally released it 2013 because I wanted to see what scholars or who was going to talk about the manifestation of his theory becoming the truth. Because that's what has occurred. 300 years have passed, and we can still see the remnants of this conditioning in our people right now today. So henceforth, I created the book Lynch and Willie, which the subtitle was Reconditioning the Mind State of a Culture.
Yes, sir. And so, you know, what I found, Brother Albert, is that a lot of people, just like so much of our history, have put slavery on the back burner. You know, it's as if it has never existed, and we are into this fantasy that, you know, we as a people in this country have arrived from that type of oppression and that type of mindset and the mental illness that slavery has caused. And is that by accident or is that on purpose that in our institutions of not even basic learning, but even in our institutions of higher learning, that this particular part of slavery in itself, it seems to be omitted. It seems to be almost obsolete. Why do you think we have so forgotten?
Okay,
what the teachings of Willie Lynch has done.
For one, we're not informed. We're not informed. And then another thing is this: a theory we're familiar with, you know, with the 5% nation. You know what I mean? The 5%. In relation to what we're talking about, is actually the fraternal order of colonies. So they're keeping it a secret, you know what I mean? And they hand it down, you know, pass it down from generation to generation. And I'm going to give you an example of what I'm talking about so we can relate to it. Now, us in our culture as black people, we might have a secret fried chicken recipe. You know what I mean? That we got from our great-great-grandmama that was passed down and handed down. But this is the operative word in that phrase, though, secret. It's a secret. And they're doing that amongst their own circles as well. You know, they're keeping it a secret because once we're informed, we're able to change or reverse or recondition our mind state. So that, you know, we may be able to make it for our decisions, or that we may be able to actually change our circumstances.
Yes, sir. And in your opinion, how has slavery or the teachings of Willie Lynch, not slavery in itself, because a lot of people, you know, you can agree or disagree, a lot of people think that slavery is the worst thing that has happened to us, and I totally disagree. Excuse me. I think that integration is the worst thing that has happened to us. So what do you think from then until now? How has slavery impacted us? And what is it that we have seemed to have forgotten? You know, because when we look at our culture, what we call our culture now is really not our culture. When we look at how we deal with one another in the communities and in the household, when we look at the stature of our men and our women, you know, how has slavery in itself revamped who we are?
I'll say this, you know, one thing that stuck out, you know, that just surfaced while you were speaking was this. It goes back to not being informed of our history, because at one time, you know, while brothers and sisters were in Africa, and, you know, the crusaders were coming through, you know, with religion, different types of religion, and, you know, slaying and undermining, you know, our people under the guise of religion. It came to a point to where the white man was he was exiled from any of our activities, basically, or coming around us. And that was for a purpose, because we know that these people are going to come through and divide and conquer. They're going to try to capitalize off of our weaknesses and our strengths as well, okay? So if we're not informed about what is going on in our history, then history will have the opportunity to present itself. And this is another reason why, you know, I was adamant about releasing this book title, no matter how controversial it was. It was because of our youth being misinformed on their history or the reasons of why they may be in the condition or the state that they're in now. And inside of Lynch and Willie, the book title, I actually have the William Lynch letter in the book, throughout the book, and I'm breaking it down and I'm commenting on, you know, I'm rebutting the letter, and I'm taking things that have happened, current events that have happened right now, to compare them to what William Lynch was laying down. Okay, so that we can identify the things that were put in place, the scheme that was put in place to debilitate our people. And this is something I'll say right here, and this should make people get on their square, you know, but I say this. I don't know how our people allowed a 5-page document to control us for 300 years, because that's all it was. When we get that William Lynch letter, it'll be a 1-page, a 5-page document or whatever. But how could a document control our people for 300 years? A document that was evolved into a theory, that evolved into a system, that evolved into a conditioning, that turned into an actual mind state and a behavior.
Well, you know, we have to really look at the reality of that, in that Willie Lynch was actually put into policy, no matter how they try to dress it up and how they try to separate themselves from it. When we look at the practices of the law enforcement, when we look at the practices of how we are policed in our communities, Willie Lynch, mm-hmm. and the systematic way of how he dealt with the slaves is still being utilized today.
It was being utilized right in our face not too long ago with the Jim Crow laws. You know, this stuff is very close to us. And the sister Michelle Alexander, I got to give her a big shout out, you know what I mean, because she just penned a monumental book called The New Jim Crow. And it's basically speaking on the internal affairs of the penal system in America and how it's related to slavery. So, you know, it's some people that are speaking out, you know, on our condition, you know, but we have to be aware and we have to be listening and we have to be tuned in. Like our listeners are tuned into this show. And if we're not aware of the information that's extended through this show, you know, then it might affect what we can do. So, like I said, right now we don't have no excuses about anything. You know, we just have to be determined to succeed.
Yes, sir. And what, you know, our parents, you know, I know you're doing a literacy program, but I want to ask, have you considered maybe a curriculum just for parents so that parents can better educate their children? Because, you know, if parents don't know, because when we're looking at the generation now, I'm almost 50, and some of my peers don't even know what Whitney Lynch is. Don't know the historical facts of slavery, so therefore they didn't teach their children, so some of our parents don't even know.
Okay, so this is what I've done, sister. With the Lynch and Willie book project, I also created a Lynch and Willie workbook, so individuals can take the information in the Lynch and Willie book. And just like you in school, you're given a textbook and then you're tested on it. Okay, this workbook has been designed to imbue this information, to stain this information on our minds, okay, so that we can be educated on the things that we're not aware of. And the main reason that I was motivated to pen this workbook is this. Now, my wife, she works at a school called Harvest Prep here in Minnesota, and it's an all-black charter school, okay? Now, they're the highest, it's some other sprinkles of, you know, races in there, but it's founded, you know, by black people. But this is the thing now. They're the highest performing charter school in Minnesota. They just made the news, CNN, I believe. They just made the front of the newspaper, everything. We're giving an award. But they don't have any African-American literature incorporated into their curriculum. So this is what motivated me to write this workbook, is to have a tool for our youth. Like you said, your son was reading The Message to the Black Man at 6 years old. So just based on, you know, the storyline or the concept of this information, it may seem like it's too heavy, you know, for young people, but it's not. We just have to break it down layman-ly so we can express these things to them that we want them to learn. So what I've done is I've actually broken some ground, and I've got these books inside of these public schools in Minneapolis.
Praise be to Allah. That is wonderful. That is wonderful. And so when is the book out now, or is it coming out?
Yeah, it's out now. I'm going to send you a digital copy, Queen. But to purchase my book titles, you know, the listeners can visit www.stompent.com. And that's www.stompent.com. And on our website, it has my book titles. They can, you know, people can go on there and order digital copies of the book for the Nooks or the, you know, the digital devices. I'll send it straight to them. And I'll also direct you, you know, to where the books can be found locally here. you can contact me personally. I'll send you a book if you want an autograph, whatever it may be. My personal contact number is 612-227-8603. Once again, that's 612-227-8603. And the reason that I'm giving my information publicly like this is it's related to this and what you had brought up earlier, what's going on with our leaders. Well, one problem is they're not accessible. I can't get in touch with Don Sanyo or one of these people running for one of these seats right here in my community unless they're at some event where some cameras are at. I got to go through all type of red tape to assess them. So one thing that sets me apart from other individuals in the community, because I mentor youth and troubled adults as well, but I make myself absolutely accessible because I'm moving on a transparent journey. I don't have anything to hide. I ain't worried about what these white folks can do to me. I done served 12 years in prison, been shot, did everything. Okay? So I'm not afraid of what the consequence of me being vocal or helping my people is going to bring on. But I'm very, very accessible. You can contact me on Facebook. You can send me a friend request to Albert Briscoe. I can't send any friend requests out now because they blocked me from networking too hard. these are ways that you can get in contact with me, and people can also, they can get informed with the literacy campaign by visiting the To Succeed You Must Read website, which is www.tosucceedyoumustread.com. All right, and, we got some literacy, some illiteracy statistics on there that people can, you know, look up, some shocking statistics that may encourage somebody or motivate somebody, you know, to pursue becoming literate or even advocating literacy, you know. So also, I got something going on. When they visit the website, the To Succeed You Must Read website, I created a scholarship called the ULA, and that stands for the Urban Literacy Awareness Scholarship. And I'm going to be awarding this scholarship for the 2013-2014 school year to students here in the greater Twin Cities area. And I'm going to consider anybody else from around the nation that makes a submission. And the requirement is submitting a 500-word essay on how to curb violence in your community. And then we're going to be awarding a $500 stipend to the person that's, you know, picked as the winner, you know, out of the essays that I submitted. What else do I have going on? I think we talked about, you know, the banquet with Dr. Farrah Gray and the 10-week book club activity.
Right.
I want to know
more about Stomp Entertainment before you go. Because we have about 32 minutes. And I want you to tell me, number one, how Stomp Entertainment started, why is it called Stomp Entertainment, and give me everything that it encompasses.
Okay, well, Stomp Entertainment was started by me having faith in somebody. I believed in somebody more than they believed in themselves, you know. But one of my little cousins, you know, he was rapping, you know. He was on the street corners around here, and he was creating a name for himself, and he was doing that while I was still selling dope. So his brother, my other cousin, he had convinced me, you know, that we probably needed to invest in Lil Drew. And I did that. I told my little cousin, I said, give me 6 months, you know, to get some little extra money, some residuals put up, and we're going to get it together. Everything didn't happen like that because my little cousin was murdered in broad daylight with an AK-47 at 17 years old, okay? So... He is the reason Stomp Entertainment came about. And Stomp is an acronym. It has an acronym to it, and it stands for Striving Towards Opportunity Multi Productions. Like I said, you know, I started out with music, and I had a struggle with that. You know, I had a lot of small successes, but I got to a point to where I had to do something where it depended on what I could do, because these other guys, my guys, they were still caught up in between hustling and gang banging and pimping, and they couldn't, you know, commit the time that was necessary to do what we was trying to do with our music, you know. So I had to involve myself in something where it depended on the effort that I put into it, because I couldn't do my job unless they did theirs when I was doing the music. So but throughout, you know, like when I was transitioning, what brought on my transition from music to books was this. My little brother, he had told me that I was a part of Stomp Entertainment, too. I wasn't just a CEO or, you know, somebody who was funding the project, the movement. He said, you were an artist, too, and I wrote a book while I was in prison. He had told me that you need to start getting on your books. My little brother's schizophrenic. His name is Davidian Johnson. He's from Chicago. But he told me that I'm an artist and I need to get these books done. So, and what I tell my guys is this, I work for you. I tell them all that I work for you. And I'm not going to tell any one of y'all to do anything that I won't do. So I ask you, I've taken myself and labeled myself as the sacrificial lamb, and I'm getting out here pushing my literary projects, and we've been well received all around the country right now. And I tell people this, I went from slanging crack to slanging paperbacks. And right now, I don't never got to sell no dope another day in my life.
Wow, that is awesome. That is an awesome work. And I didn't think I'd find anybody else out there like me, but who got their hands in so many things. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, I got a request. What did he say? Oh, okay. DJ Black Caesar, who is he's one of my hosts on Wednesday night, and he's also the engineer on my show on Thursday. He wants to know, would you? But I'm gonna tell DJ Black Caesar, I know you're listening. Albert can't make friends requests, and neither can you. So DJ Caesar said he got 29 more days in Facebook jail, and I don't know how many days you got in Facebook jail, but whoever got the shortest, okay, he got 23, DJ Black Caesar. So in 23 days, remind me, and I'll ask Albert to add you. He wants you to send a friends request. Y'all both locked up.
Tell me, you can give him my phone number. Then we can.
Well,
know
I'm
going to
bring him in live right now. Hold on, this is him.
Yeah.
DJ Black Caesar, is that you?
How you doing, Sister Gator?
What's up, Black Caesar?
How you doing, Black man? It's good to meet you, man.
Oh, definitely, and I'm doing wonderful.
Yes, sir. Hey, I've been checking you out, man. You sound like somebody I would love to meet, man. Sound like you're on the right track. Sound like you got a lot going on, and I think we can communicate and get some things networking together. We can work together. So I think we need to talk on Monday. Whenever you have time, I think we need to talk and chop it up a little bit.
Okay, that sounds great, man.
Cool. I think we're on the same track, man, because basically everything you just said right now, I've been through the same thing, brother, but I haven't wrote a book yet, but I've been thinking about it, but I'm so busy, I really don't know when I have time, so I'm looking for somebody else that can write that book for me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Right now, I'm actually challenging myself with my first, biography right now. I'm writing my wife's story, man, and it's called If You Only Knew What God Has Brought Me Through. My wife is a true soldier. I mean, she grew up not being able to read. You know, she didn't meet her father until she was, an adult, 30-some years old. Her husband was killed in front of her family. Her son is in jail right now for murder. She was she had a teen pregnancy. All her daughters had teen pregnancies. She had two sisters die from cancer. One sister died from full-blown AIDS. You know, she was dealing with addiction and abuse. And she got a beautiful story, man. So I've been owning my craft, writing about others. And hopefully that's something that we may be able to, get in the works, brother.
Yes, sir, man. That's amazing right there, brother. I'm sorry to hear all that.
Wow, that is an amazing story.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Amazing story.
I follow every story like that, man, and I can feel your pain. I feel what you're going through, brother, and I just want to see what I could do maybe to help you out a little bit, and maybe we can work together on some projects. So I'm going to get with you on Monday. I'm going to get your number from Sister Gidget, and we can talk on Monday if that's all right with you.
Oh, that's absolutely fine. And, brother, your support is a contribution towards turning my vision into a reality.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. I'm going to sit back and listen for the next couple of minutes. I'm just going to sit back and listen. So, Sister Gidget, you have a wonderful show tonight.
Thank you, DJ Black Caesar. And I just put Brother Albert's number in your inbox, so there you go.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, and I'll be logging on and putting all my information on your page on there. So whoever's listening, if they got, if they want to reach out, they can reach out to me. I'm going to answer the phone, respond, email back, whatever.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, you know, I'm going to cut the show short a little bit tonight because I think I've asked you everything. We're about an hour and a half into the show. We got like 24 minutes, but I don't know if I told you, and I might have forgotten, but this is Young Gifted in Black, and Young Gifted in Black has a rule, and that's every guest artist has to do a freestyle before they leave. So, Brother Albert.
Oh man!
You gonna give us a freestyle?
I'm gonna just say this because I'm a little gutter, but I'm gonna tell y'all this. Don't mind me, dog. I ain't nobody, but I can have your ass knocked off. Hang with the type of brothers that stand on law, and that's it. You know, I ain't no rapper. I let them guys do that. But that's what I try to do. I try to surround myself around people that stand on law because they say iron steel stopping steel. You know, so I gotta place people around me that's smarter than me, have more resources than me, more confident than me, so that I can feed off of them. You know, and that's the whole purpose of the couple bars that I gave you. You know, I thought myself B-Lo. I was given that name because of how I conducted my business in the streets. You know, I was real low and professional. I was never, you know, worried about swagging or being flamboyant. I'd rather look at my money, be able to look and count it up, you know, instead of spending it on something. So, you know, I'd be telling people, don't mind me. I might don't be nobody, but I can have you knocked off or something. And I ain't glorifying that.
Oh, God. Okay, we're not trying to do that. Okay, but one more time before you go, I want you to give everybody your social network information and how they can get in touch with you. I want you to tell them about how to get in touch and participate in order to succeed, you must read, and also how they can get the book. So give it to them one more time before we go.
Oh, okay. For you know, for anybody interested in, you know, the first of all, you know, I'm raising some money. I'm finna give away $15,000 in books this summer to 150 kids. Every kid is gonna receive 10 books and a dictionary. The first thing I'm gonna teach them is how to utilize that dictionary because that's the most powerful tool that I've ever come across, you know, when it comes to literacy. But
yes, sir.
They can also sponsor. I got a campaign going on, an online fundraiser, and I believe that I posted it up on the Nation Building Network page, and it will be posted up later on. But people can sponsor a young man or a parent or a family, you know, for the banquet, and the money is being utilized to actually buy the materials, the books, the journals, and we're sending 4 kids to our local public broadcasting station to gain the skill of using the iMovie course because the young men are going to do a documentary over the summer experience. But you can go to succeedyoumustread.com and get information on the ULA, the Urban Literacy Awareness Scholarship, the workshops that I perform, and also how to contact me. I sell my books on my website, which is www.stompent.com, and that's stompent.com. You can find my book titles, get a brief history on Stomp Entertainment, also see who's supporting, you know, our movement. On Facebook, you can send me a friend request at Albert Briscoe. That's my Facebook name. And you can contact me personally at 612-227-8603. Once again, that's 612-227-8603. And I believe that's enough information for somebody to get up with.
Okay, and also I want to remind the listening audience, you still have until June 1st to send me an MP3 or send me the link to your YouTube video to YGBLive@gmail.com. That's Y as in yo-yo, G as in girl, B as in boy, live@gmail.com. That is your audition entry to be in the movie Steps of a Mastermind starring Leon, and that movie is written and produced and directed by our own sister Faith Diggs. So if you are still interested, please submit your link to your YouTube video or give me an MP3 in the email at ygblive.com. The deadline is June 1st. If you want to audition for that movie that will be filmed on location in Chicago in August. So don't forget to submit your entries, and the deadline is June 1st. Albert Briscoe, brother, thank you so much. I want to thank you personally for what you're doing. I want to thank you on behalf of our people, on behalf of the babies, on behalf of the inmates, for all that you're doing for us and for your family and for your community. You are certainly labeled a leader in our day and in our time. In my opinion, I don't care who differs with that, because for you to be 34 years of age, you are actually the age of my children. So to be 34 years of age and to be so innovative and so creative and so determined and so driven to do this work and to do a very large body of work, I thank God for the creativity that he's given you, and I thank God for you, dear brother. So thank you so much for honoring us with this interview. And I got another rule. You know, once you come on, you can't just come on one time. You got to come back at some time in the future. Let us know what you're doing. And please, those of you who are interested in the reading program or interested in any of the writings of Brother Albert Briscoe, please go to www.stompent.com. And hopefully sometime in the near future we'll get you back. We're going to close out tonight with our own beloved brother, our godfather of Young Gifted and Black, Problem 13, and his song Slaughterhouse. One Nation, One Love, y'all. Good night.
Welcome to my slaughterhouse.
Last name God, first name Black. Lyrics so tight you feel compelled to hit reverse playback. I disperse lame rap, go berserk, plain fact. Swinging my sword if you don't wanna get hurt, stay back. Stay back. I ain't a slave to a label, I love being free, being me. So I guess you never see me on TV. Receive a hip hop award on BET. Instead, see me at Savior's Day with other believers. Be tired of hearing rappers rapping about they got major cash. Cause all that money that you got ain't gonna save your ass. From the shock of the hour, homie, that's a fact. You gon' regret every word in that crap you rap. Truth is why you walking with a limp like you're cool. A lot of you are broke, getting pimped by a Jew. Modern day good fella, I'm Bobby De Niro. Elijah is the Don, Farrakhan is my hero. The Fed said he watching me close, but I don't study them. Looking for hypocrites in the mob so I can bloody them. Stomping with my hard bottom Stacey's like I'm Joe Pesci. Catch him in the streets, cause in the monster captain won't let me. Won't let me. Won't let me.
Welcome to my slaughterhouse.
See me as I put your devils.
Welcome to my slaughterhouse.
PO3 is on another level.
Welcome to my slaughterhouse.
My tongue is like a butcher knife, I tell ya.
Welcome to my slaughterhouse. Welcome to my slaughterhouse.
It's P13, you can't see me like an abstract photo. With your skinny jeans sagging, showing your ass crack, homo. Your jeans so tight, you must have small testicles. Skinny jeans ain't gangster, you're looking transsexual. And now I see Lil Wayne wearing leggings. Get him lipstick, a person of Sierra, the fit is headed. Drake can flow, but he be acting too feminine.
That's right.
It ain't hard to tell Lil Wayne bending.
Who has been your favorite artist to work with and why?
Wayne is my favorite person to work with, though, because it's just, Lil Wayne, he's just too good.
You gotta give Wayne the love.
He's just too good.
Drake, just thank too you good. Yeah. So much.
Jay-Z is part of a satanic cult, very crazy. I guess Beyonce giving birth to Rosemary's baby. She needs to tell Sasha Fierce to sit her ass down. Ariana's like a flood that gets passed round. Nicki Minaj is of the greatest stylist, whacking in fact. Without the Botox injections, you probably flatten the back. Kanye's the all I can say is I'm disappointed. You let the devil turn you out, now you Satan's anointed. You used to be the MC that Jesus walked with. You used to talk truth in your raps, now you only talk shit.
Come on,
with Khalifa, I wanna take a bat and bust your brain. Cause you're misrepresenting with a Muslim name. Either change the name or come right in exact, it's true. Black and yellow, I'm ready to beat you till you black and blue. I'm throwing stones while I'm living in a glass house. A law bulletproof my glass so it can't be smashed out. Smashed out, smashed out.
Welcome to my slaughterhouse.
See me as I put your devils.
Welcome to my
slaughter. PO3 is on another level.
Welcome to my slaughter.
My tongue is like a butcher knife, I tell ya.
Welcome to my slaughterhouse. Welcome to my slaughterhouse.
All these fake garbage rappers gon' stay hating. I knock them out like Fight Night, but this ain't PlayStation. It's not a game, partner, I'm coming real with it. Problem 13 is on the scene, you gotta deal with it. Jesus, a satanic coaster, it's a human sacrifice. I wonder what really happened with your nephew and Kathy White. Who's this dude, P13? He got hella nerve. I'm a Farrakhan disciple, I ain't never stirred. And I don't care about you putting me on some death list. Anyone mess with me, got to have a death wish. Your arms too short to box with God. I'm back for Allah, mighty God for all. So you better be careful, homie, what you decide to do with me. A wrong move and Beyonce will be doing your eulogy. This goes for Lil Wayne, little satanic gay self too. Step to me and you won't find a soul on earth to help you. Not cause of me, but the God that defends me. We'll pay you back quick if you decide to come against me. Who got more power, your Lucifer or my Allah? Well, let's see. Come against me, homie. Try to go. Try to go. Try to go.
Welcome to my slaughterhouse.
Problem13.net.